Davey B, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. In the building with us is somebody who's no stranger to our airwaves, somebody who's been on the front line fighting with the scourge of police brutality, among other things. You know, she and her organization deal with a whole lot of issues, but this upcoming week, they have something very special that's going to happen. Rashida Grenache, in the building with us. First of all, how are you? How are things going?
Pretty good, pretty good. Actually, this is a big day for us. We're going to be filing our notice of intent with the city clerk today to circulate our petition for a police commission. So this is a red letter day for us.
Meaning today, this day, Monday.
Today, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Why has that been such a sticking point? Why has that been such a hard nut to crack in the city of Oakland?
Well, in the city of Oakland, despite its self-proclaimed progressiveness, is not very much different than any other city in the country. It cowers before police union, and politicians are very wary and apprehensive about doing anything that will alienate the police union and cause them to lose support. And so politicians thinking about careers and how to advance their careers put that over what the community's best interests are.
But most of the police in the city of Oakland don't live in Oakland, so they're not voters. How does that translate?
Well, they're not voters, but they are contributors, big time. And so when the police union endorses you and supports you, and they can bring in not only money from their own organization, but from statewide organizations, law enforcement organizations. So that's big money. That's big money.
Yeah, but we have folks who've run for office who have been able to do that without the aid of the police unions in the past. Even though she's been cowering to them now, and and seems to be trying to curry favor with them, Kamala Harris didn't have the support of the police unions. In fact, they were actively working against her when she was in San Francisco running for DA and then attorney general. And it was around her position on the death penalty, right? But she managed to win. Hillary Clinton, who many of us see her as being very hawkish and what have you, has never had the support of police unions, yet she's gone on to be a state senator in the city, in a state of New York where they have the largest police union in the country. And I bring this up because I can probably pinpoint the number of folks who have been able to successfully run for office without the endorsement of the police union, which brings to question, what is this really about? Is this really about the police union and their power, or is this maybe the political leanings of the people running for office that they want to be in bed with them anyway?
I think that's right. I think it's both. I think that there has been too much emphasis placed on the power of the police union locally, although statewide they are very powerful. But I agree with you that there are, it's not just one simple thing. It's obviously public perception as well. When you want to get voted in or reelected, you want the public to think that you're putting public safety first, and it's back to the old law and order argument of being proactive when it comes to law enforcement. So not wanting to antagonize police and have them publicly badmouth you, basically, as a candidate for office.
We're talking with Rashida Grenache in the building with us. You're filing for this police commission. What does that mean? Okay, you have, especially based upon the scenario you described, people are afraid of the police union.
Well, that's the point. And I think what we have to look at here is the fact that we are still under federal oversight. We're talking about 2003, the city signing an agreement with plaintiff's attorneys, John Burris and Jim Channon, to reform the police department. This agreement was supposed to have been concluded within 5 years. The document itself says, under no circumstances more than 7 years. Well, here we are, and we're in year 13, which is the longest period of federal oversight, continuous federal oversight, of any city in the country.
Right.
What does that tell you? It tells you that the city of Oakland is not in charge of its police department. The city of Oakland is unable to compel its police department to live up to the agreement that it signed in a timely manner. So it tells you that the Oakland Police Department is essentially autonomous, that they do whatever they do, regardless of who the mayor is, who the city administrator is, even who the police chief is. So the police commission is an attempt to change the structure of the way oversight happens in Oakland.
Right. What would the powers of this police commission have, and how would it be different than San Francisco, which many people have accused of being just another adage to the police union there?
I think there's two things to look at. One is the model, and the other is how the model is being implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Our model is based on the San Francisco model, but it has a lot of improvements because we've observed what's gone wrong over there.
Right.
So we have put in place some protections, hopefully, against those problems.
What has gone wrong?
So, for example, there are no term limits. So you have commissioners that are there kind of like the Supreme Court for life. You have Joe Marshall over there. This is his 11th year. And so what happens is these folks get co-opted. They get institutionalized. They forget who they're representing. They start to think that they're representing the police department and the city of San Francisco instead of the people who live in San Francisco. So we have, in our model, included term limits, two term limits of 3 years each,
okay,
to make sure that folks are not thinking that this is a lifetime position and that we have turnover. We also have a different method of appointing who becomes a commissioner. In our model, we don't have city council and mayor appointments. We have appointments made by a selection panel of Oakland residents.
Now, that depoliticizes it.
Absolutely. That's the point. And so we've taken the lessons of San Francisco into account, but the model in San Francisco is a good model because they actually have the power to impose final discipline on police officers, and they also have the power to unilaterally fire the chief of police.
Right.
The fact that they're not using those powers is another matter, but they have the power.
You said that the Oakland police act with impunity. I'm using that word,
mm-hmm,
impunity. And you said even the chief of police can't control that. You know, on the surface, that would sound cliche, but when you look at the powers that have been granted to the police through the Policeman's Bill of Rights and those type of job protection measures, you know, and that's basically what they are. So you, as a police officer, you basically get tenured, and it's very hard and very difficult for you to be removed, no matter who's in charge. With that being said, what does that really mean at the end of the day? So you change the police chief. What does that mean? You know, when the police chief is increasingly in many cities not really the final say-so with their own departments.
Exactly. That's exactly the point, Davey. And that is exactly why we want the police commission to have the ability to fire the chief. Because the problem is that the chief, the way the structure is now, is beholden to the police union. Police chiefs don't want to earn a vote of no confidence from their union. This is basically what happened to Anthony Bounce in Baltimore.
Right.
And so when chiefs are beholden to the union, that's the problem. Then that means the chief can't really be a leader because he's too afraid of opposing opinion from the rank and file. But when you have a police commission who can fire the chief, that actually emboldens the chief to do the right thing.
But does the police chief actually have the power to move a department in a particular direction? Or is that, you know, what's the deal on that?
The deal on it is basically that as long as the union has the power they do, backed by the politicos, the chief is in a bad spot. The chief needs institutional support. A police commission provides the antidote to police union power.
Right.
Because the police chief now has more to fear from the commission than from the union. The union can't fire him, but the commission can.
Right.
So the commission can actually backstop the police chief and allow him to implement what he wants to implement. The other issue is the issue of arbitration. As you know, in Oakland, Judge Henderson has been ferociously harsh on the city for failing to sustain discipline and having discipline overturned when it comes to arbitration. Well, in our model...
What do you mean by that?
Well, so the chief fires a police officer. Police officer, with his union rep and legal team, which is free, of course, appeals that decision to an arbitrator, more often than not, gets his job back.
And who's this arbitrator?
Mutually agreed upon, right, between the union and the city of Oakland. There are a list of arbitrators that have been mutually agreed upon. But historically and throughout the country, not just in Oakland, arbitrators tend to favor the police appeals of discipline. They tend to either reject the discipline entirely or modify the discipline that was imposed by the city. So the chief, Judge Henderson, hired an investigator to look into why, in Oakland's case, an even greater percentage of cases of discipline were overturned in arbitration. And this investigator, Edward Swanson, released a report last year that really condemned the city for all sorts of failures to prepare cases adequately.
Oh, so the city was dragging its feet.
Exactly.
Ah, so they were sabotaging the process.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so the city had a certain amount of time to respond. They have responded, but the judge is still not satisfied with the city's response. And in fact, he went on to say, if this is the best you can do while I'm still here as a federal overseer, it raises the question of what you will do when I'm gone.
Rashida, I have a number of questions, but one of them that comes to mind has to deal with the money, taxpayer money that goes for settlements. And I know we were at a hearing maybe last year, and you were giving out, it was at City Council, as a matter of fact, and you were giving out papers that had a figure of $74 million.
Right.
I don't think people can really put their heads around this. But maybe you can break this down. $74 million have been paid in settlements alone?
Yes.
Settlements, not meaning that this didn't even go to trial. This is just like, okay, you know, let's just clear our hands of it. Here's your money.
City almost never goes to trial over police misconduct cases. They almost always settle. And, yes, $74 million in a 10 or 12-year period. The important fact there is it's not only an incredibly large amount of money, but it's more than San Francisco and San Jose combined right. In the same period of time. But here's another figure that will blast you. On top of all that, think about how much money the city of Oakland, namely the taxpayers of Oakland, have spent on federal monitoring.
We're paying for this monitoring?
Are you serious?
I didn't know.
Take a guess.
$1 million a year? You laugh.
Try doubling. We have paid up through June of 2015 $30 million just in federal oversight.
So this becomes a game of sorts.
A game that we are losing as a community.
Because it's like, well, I don't care if you spend $74 million. That money that comes out could have went to schools, could have went to prevention programs, could have went to
jobs
or any number of programs and activities that, in theory, would remove somebody from, you know, having to go on the underground economy into the above ground economy and be, quote unquote, a productive citizen. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling thing. If we can just keep them draining money to a few, and you know, to people who you brutalize, then you can guarantee that you're going to have a group of people who are going to be shortchanged, and which will necessitate having a police.
Exactly. It is a self-perpetuating cycle in which the city, if you want to call it, the city wins and the community loses. Obviously, there are winners and losers every time a decision is made. And in this case, with respect to the police, the community is a big-time loser, no doubt.
We're talking to Rashida Grenage, if you're just tuning in, with Pueblo.
Actually, I stepped away from Pueblo at the end of 2014 order to be the coordinator of the Coalition for Police Accountability.
That's right, that's right. So I always associate you with Pueblo forever.
And I do, too. I do, too.
You have been to Sacramento, and you know the lay of the land there. How does this look in terms of moving legislation that really starts to defang some of these almost impenetrable protections of police? And let me just kind of, you know, preface that question for the audience so they kind of understand where we're at. Recently, I think it was maybe a week and a half ago, it was ruled that the 6 to 8 police officers who shot the two women, two Latino women, 100 times when they were pursuing Christopher Donner. These two women were delivering papers. They showed up in the neighborhood. They didn't know what was going on. They were just delivering papers. The police thought that their van, their blue van, was the black van being driven by Christopher Donner. And 8 of them, without warning, opened up and started shooting that van. They shot 100 times. It's a miracle that the women lived. You know, the police apologized. They got them a new van. I think they settled out of court. So that's on the tab of L.A., Los Angeles citizens. But what was interesting about that, and I'm just putting on my journalist hat, I immediately called down to LAPD to get the names of the officers. And the reason why, we wanted to know who those officers were and what their track record was. Were these gun-happy people that had a history of abuse, or was it really a mistake by honest-to-God, hard-working people who just, you know, made a mistake, quotations around that. And I couldn't get the name. So, you know, they said at the time they were investigating. So it's like, okay, a couple of weeks later, no name, right? A month later, no name. 6 months later, no name. By now, the women have gotten a truck, and they're on the way to getting a settlement. Still no names. 2 years later, to this day, they have not released the names of those 8 officers, and that is really on the purview of the police chief. It's like, not going to do it. And so we don't know the names of these people who shot. And when you look at the larger picture of officers, whether it's from Cleveland on down to what just recently happened in San Francisco, where you see people being shot down in a hail of bullets, and you want to ask the question, what's the mind state of the people who did it? Did they just come back from Iraq? Had they did 5 tours of duty, suffering from PS? None of those questions are able to get answered. Even when John Burris filed his initial lawsuit against Highway Patrol for the beating of, I think it was Marlene Pinnock, he had to file it as John Doe because they were able to keep the name hidden.
Right.
I forget the officer name, Officer Andrews or whatever his name is. But with all that being said, how do we even change just that, you know, sort of protection in Sacramento?
Well, we tried. Actually, this is a result of the Copley, the California Supreme Court decision in August of 2006. Known as the Copley Press decision, which essentially pulled civilian oversight under the same umbrella as internal affairs. Previous to that, I would go to every Citizens Police Review Board hearing in Oakland, hearings of complaints against subject officers. They were public. The reports of the investigations of the Citizens Police Review Board were public, included officers' names.
Right.
The Copley Press decision killed it. The Copley Press basically said civilian oversight has to be subject to the same privacy rulings as the Police Officers Bill of Rights, the same confidentiality protections as internal affairs documents. And so ever since then, all of this stuff is secret. And as Jim Channon said the other night at the Wellstone Club, we do know the history of the guy who shot Tamir Rice.
Right.
Because, in fact, they don't have that same level of confidentiality and protection in Ohio that we do in California.
But the Fraternal Order Police are trying to make this a national standard.
Of course they are trying to do that. And, of course, we need to fight back vigorously to make sure that that never happens.
Mm.
But the fact is, California is the most repressive and suppressive state in the union with respect to these laws. It's ironic that states like Texas and Florida and Ohio and all these other states have
red states.
Exactly. And they are have more transparency when it comes to police practices than we do. So we are challenging and have challenged lawmakers in Sacramento, but they are very, very reluctant. And we heard from Senator Bonta the other night and Assemblyman Thurman on this issue, and they both just shake their head and say this is really, really hard to get anything done around police transparency in California.
What are the obstacles, and how does this happen in a so-called progressive blue state? Like you mentioned, you can go to Texas, and they don't have those protections.
Exactly.
You go to North Carolina, they don't even have a police union, not even allowed to have that there. And we can go down the list. Here we are in the state of California that prides itself on being the trendsetters, prides itself on setting precedent, and prides itself arrogantly when you go to other states and see Californians moving into those places. As I, you know, I see that a lot in places like Texas and Atlanta and or in Georgia, where people are like, well, you know, this is how we do it, and we're better. So you got this mindset that suggests that we are forward thinking, yet and still, Democrats. We're not talking about Tea Party people.
Exactly.
We're not talking about far right wing Donald Trump supporters. We're talking about Democrats who are looking for us to vote for Kamala if you're a Democrat in the fall, that are looking for us to be a sane voice in Congress. So let's put a Nancy Pelosi back into office and maybe she'll be Speaker again, et cetera, et cetera.
And if you're a woman and you don't want to go to hell, you better vote for Hillary Clinton, right?
Right. So you got all that here, but how is it that that party and this sort of grouping of people that have a left-leaning orientation are so hardcore with the police? How does this happen?
Jamie, I think that is the $64 million question as to why these Democrats in California are acting like they're Republicans, and that's the whole point. They are. I think a lot of these folks are coming from districts, you know, that where law and order is a priority, where their constituents expect them to uphold law enforcement and to be supportive of the police. And
is that a myth? I mean, it seems.
If it's something else, Damien, nobody's discovered it yet. I really, you know. We had Senator Lockyer was in charge of public safety up through the end of the term.
Right.
What has she done around this issue? I mean, she's from Berkeley, for God's sake.
Right.
You know, so I don't know how any of this gets explained. I haven't heard anyone offer a reasonable explanation for why what you've described accurately is the case.
Let's take somebody like Bonta. I remember when he was running, and I went to a couple of events where there were people at these events who are aggressively and very consistently fighting police repression. They're sitting in the room, and he's courting them, right? So you already know the lay of the land. These are people that are looking to you to support. You go and talk to him and says it's hard to get legislation through. Explain. There's got to be more explanation. Does he name and say, these are the obstacles, these are the people that need to be removed, these are the procedures that need to change, or they just give you a blanket, Really? I mean, well, explain.
Really, yeah. Well, at Wellstone the other night, that he was challenged exactly on that issue, and he did give just a blanket answer that we have a lot of Democrats in Sacramento who are not going to move on this issue. You know, he carried the bill on body cameras, of the use of body cameras, but he actually had to water it down in order to get it to pass. He had to actually water it down in terms of allowing officers to view the footage before it went public. And before
Say what?
So he had a bill. I don't know the specifics of it entirely, but from my understanding, it has to do with establishing a policy of officers wearing body cameras. The question then around the footage from those cameras, and the issue of whether or not officers, and this is a nationwide conversation, by the way, should be able to view the footage before writing their report on the incident. And in order to get this bill to pass, he had to back away from the original position that they should not be able to see the footage, and he had to allow for cases where they would be able to watch the video before writing their incident report.
A bill that was passed last year, or maybe the year before, gives the citizens the power to dismantle the police department or sue them. I'm going to remember this because we had people like George Calvis on to explain that. This passed. We also had Jerry Brown signing into law that we can't, we're not going to use grand juries here in California, and many people would applaud that and say that's a forward-thinking type of action. How does this happen with the police unions when you can't even get a body camera bill passed where the police officers aren't allowed to see the footage before they write their report? Which I think people should just really think about that for a quick minute. It's like you get your story together, here's the film to watch it, and then you craft it the way that you want.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But with that being said, how did these bills pass? Or was this a compromise? What was the deal with that?
You know, Davey, I think you'd have to be behind the scenes to know what kind of horse trading went on. I'm sure that that's really what it comes down to at the end, is that people make deals. They say, okay, we'll do this, but in exchange, we promise that we won't do something else. I'm not in those rooms, and I don't have that kind of insider information, insider trading, you might call it. But I'm sure that that's where the rubber meets the road, is that people figure out what the traffic will bear, and they do the minimum. They make it look good. They sell it. And then in exchange, something else went down that we're not even aware of that was much more important to law enforcement.
They say all politics are local. So let's look at this from a local lens.
Right.
You know, you're pushing to have a police commission.
Yes.
And that should ideally put a dent in a city that has paid $74 million in police settlements. That the money alone should be enough to perk everybody's ears up and raise cause for concern. With that being said, you know, who are the obstacles in Oakland? You know, we have a city council, so many of them show up at rallies and meetings and have, you know, lauded themselves as being very progressive. Who are the ones that are sitting there going, no, Rashida, we're not going to get behind a police commission? Let's put their names out there.
Well, so far we don't have any overt opposition on the council. We actually have three council members who have expressed support so far and are willing to co-sponsor. Dan Kolb, mm-hmm. Noel Gallo, and Rebecca Kaplan so far.
Okay.
And so we would need two additional votes when this comes before them in June for them to place this on the ballot. But in the meantime, we're going to be collecting signatures because we want to make sure that what gets put on the ballot is what we want.
Right.
Not that we have to throw this provision out and that provision out in order to get the five votes. So we want to have some kind of an insurance protection. So we're going to be collecting signatures to make sure that we can hold firm on the aspects of this police commission that are truly necessary, including what they call the nuclear one, which is depriving OPOA of the right to go to arbitration after discipline is imposed.
That
is the nuclear option, which says when you are fired, you stay fired. That's what happens in San Francisco. When you are fired in San Francisco as a police officer, that's the end of the line. You have nowhere to go other than to file a writ in court, and that's only on procedure. You're not going to get anything reversed on the merit. So that's what we want in Oakland, because even the chief has said he doesn't like it when he has to look at an officer sitting at a desk that has been fired and who got his job back. Even the chief doesn't like that. So, and obviously Judge Henderson is not very convinced that the city is doing what they could do to uphold the discipline that they impose. So,
but as a federal oversight, what powers does he have to intervene in that sort of discrepancy?
Well, what he's done is ordered these investigations to occur to find out what the heck has happened and to require the city to write a response, which they have done, but which he's not satisfied with. So we still have about another year to go, at least under this federal oversight. And what we want to make sure of is that when this federal oversight is over, when the city appeals and files their motion to vacate this order, and the judge signs off on it, our question, and this is where this Coalition for Police Accountability started, we started with the question of what happens then? What happens when we don't have a federal judge here anymore looking over the city's shoulder? What happens? What are we going to have left after this 13, 14, 15-year-old saga of federal oversight? What will we have that remains and that is sustainable? And the answer is nothing.
Wow.
And that's why this commission is absolutely necessary to fill what will be a vacuum of external oversight.
We're talking with Rashida Granage, Coalition of Police Accountability, in the building with us. We also know her from Pebble. So just when people go, I know who that is. The mayor.
Yes.
Our mayor, who sat up and on the first day of office, spent her day with a group of people where 75% of its members don't even live in Oakland, which means they didn't vote for her, or they didn't go to the polls directly. What's her deal with all this, and where does she stand? And if I'm correct, when there was an attempt before, she's the one that kind of nixed it as a city council person?
She did. In fairness, so did the others. They were afraid of competition for Measure X or Y or whatever it is, the violence prevention measure.
Right.
So they didn't want any other measure on the same ballot to compete with that. So Libby wasn't the only one, but you're right. And in this case, we did meet with her earlier in late last year. And her position is that she is not in favor of a police commission that would take power away from her. And so,
what power does she have?
Well, she has the power to fire the chief, for example.
Okay.
She doesn't want to lose that power. Actually, she wouldn't lose it, because under the commission, she could still, the way at least that our measure is written, either the commission or the mayor, or they could jointly fire the chief. But somehow she senses that a police commission would somehow compromise her authority over the police department. And our position is, how many mayors have we had since 2003 that haven't been able to bring this police department into compliance?
Right.
If they have that kind of power, but they can't use it, what good is it?
Yeah, so she can fire the police chief, but we haven't seen her exercise that. And on her watch, we have 8 killings in Oakland after
Correct.
A two-year
hiatus
on that. So,
right.
So what's her? How is she improving things? You know, money is still being going in settlements. So how has she stopped that hemorrhaging if she has this authority?
Right, exactly. And so that's the point that we want to make, and that we hope that Oakland residents will understand, is that regardless of who we have had as a mayor, and some obviously have a better track record than others, but the fact is that none of them have been able to bring the Oakland Police Department into compliance with this set of reforms that they themselves agreed to.
Right. Let me put on another hat, or change direction slightly, Rashida. Many people who listen to this show, come to this station, understand the importance of unions. And unions, you know, are instrumental in what we would say are job protections, whether you want to use the word tenure or, you know, whatever it is, right? We all look at a faltering economy. We look at an environment where CEOs and people running things are running roughshod over workers. So CEOs make $1 million, you make $10, and we're supposed to be happy. We also live in a state where, you know, you could just be fired. You know, you walk in today like, we're going to fire you. And, you know, there's nothing you can really do, right? So I don't like your hair, I don't like your shoes, I'm firing you. And you have very little recourse, unless you do have union protection, right? And we've seen over the years a push to kind of limit the powers of unions. So, you know, we had the ruling in the Supreme Court, not the state Supreme Court, I think it was, to kind of smash on teachers who had tenure. You know, they wanted to say that's an unconstitutional thing. And people cheered that. Like, yeah, now we can fire all the teachers, right? Because before, the perception was it was impossible to do so, right? So that is in place. We've seen people go to Sacramento to pass legislation when transit workers, especially after the last BART strike, went on there. It's like, we need to have the ability to weaken these unions. So we see all this cheering on in this blue state to weaken job protections. Yet the police job protections get stronger and stronger. How do we make sense of that? And for people who would want the police protections weakened, how are you reconciling yourselves with the fact that maybe you want to have your own job protections increase? That if you're working at a place and you put 10, 15 years in there, you don't want to suddenly find yourself, as many people did after 08, out on the streets, no job, and not even able to compete in this rapidly changing marketplace. So how do we kind of, you know, make sense of that?
Right. So we, first of all, I want to say that we are really proud that we have in our coalition as members SEIU 1021 and we have ILWU Local 10.
Okay.
So we have labor and we respect labor.
Mm-hmm.
This is in no way this effort to establish a police commission in any way a slam on the ability of workers to have due process.
Okay.
The fact is the police union has, in fact, due process rights. When an officer is notified that there is an intention on the part of the city to discipline, he has all kinds of rights. He has appeal rights up through going to the police chief, and it's called a Skelly hearing. He has free legal and so forth.
That's key. They get free legal.
That's well, through their union.
Right.
Through the union participation, yes, they have free counsel.
Okay.
And that extends to settlements and all the other legal complications. So in no way are we trying to compromise a police officer's rights to be heard, to have appeal rights up through the chief. But what we want is to make sure that once those rights have been exhausted, then discipline that is finally arrived at is final. We also want to make a distinction and draw a distinction because even though we call them police unions, there are a lot of folks who really disagree with that notion and really want to call them associations.
Yeah.
And they're not true labor unions in every sense of the word.
Well, because they actually go on, they go against the unions in far too many situations.
Exactly. And so there is kind of philosophically a distinction that really does need to be made.
Right.
I think the other issue around police unions is that the problem is not only in terms of discipline of officers. The problem is that police unions try to influence policy. That's where we think they have crossed the line. So in other words, you know, when the chief wants to institute a particular policy, if they don't like it, they will create a real backlash and they will drag the city in to meet and confer. So in other words,
these workers would do that, right? Do you draw a distinction? Say like the teachers union, you know, that says, you know, we don't want you to put standardized testing. into place, right? So they'll fight that. That's influencing policy. How do we parse that?
Right. And so you're right that there is a kind of fuzzy line there, but when it comes to the issue of the chief being able to manage his department, when it comes to the community's ability to say, we want the police department to do this and we don't want them to do that, to have the union fighting that and basically tying the chief's hands and not permitting him to follow the will of the community, that is a problem. Mm. And so this is something, again, that the police commission would take up. The police commission would have to approve changes in policy.
Right.
And that gives the community the opportunity to weigh in. So, for example, if the city decides they don't need community policing anymore and that they would rather put all their folks into patrol or into special units, and the community says, heck no, we're not going for it, they would have the opportunity to have their voice heard by the commission, and the
right.
commission would then be the decider.
Right. And that makes sense. It's community control.
Exactly.
For public resources,
exactly.
In this case, the police. And I guess I would just add to that, you know, it seems a bit disingenuous if you're going to use and act and allow people to embrace the perception that you're a union, but then you don't do union things. So union people make the sacrifice. So if there's a strike, they don't cross the line.
Right.
That may mean they don't get the wages, right? They you know, all these different things.
Right.
When the ports have been shut down, you know, those union folks took a hit. Like, yeah, that's money out my pocket that doesn't come back because
right.
we won't cross that line.
That's right.
And so it's with that solidarity and it's with that understanding and shared sacrifice in many instances that, you know, that you can understand a type of direction that they go in. You can look and say, all right, you know, you kind of paid your dues here, literally. But here you have an agency that will call itself a union, but then will go against unions. So they will cross the line. They will be the one to arrest unions. They won't go up into a building and say, these folks did wrong. They won't sit back and say, you know what? We don't cross that line. We stand with our union brothers and sisters. They are consistently on the other side.
Exactly.
Under the guise of, well, you know, I don't know what the guise is that they use. You know, they're a public entity, but then other public unions don't cross the line.
Exactly. Exactly.
So why? What makes them any different?
Yeah. So they are really a hybrid. I mean, I think in some respects, clearly they're a union in terms of the benefits that they provide for their members, but in other respects,
that unions fought for.
Exactly.
Where union members were killed by police to actually fight for that they now use
exactly.
to their advantage.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Wow. That's.
And again, when a teacher is fired, do they get to go to an arbitrator and get their job back? How many times have you heard that?
Right. Well, definitely
there you
not
go.
Now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
As we close out, you also are having a set of hearings. Can you talk about that quickly?
Well, actually, it's a community forum this Thursday evening at the First African Methodist Episcopal Church on 37th and Telegraph. And it's a community forum where we want folks who have had interactions with OPD in the last several years to come forward and testify about what happened to them, what they experienced. And even if they haven't had direct experience, if they witnessed an incident or were part of a group in which an incident went down, we want to hear people's testimonies about what happened.
So this is kind of like a tribunal.
Well, because the federal monitor will be there. The federal monitor who reports to Judge Henderson will be there.
Mm-hmm.
They want to hear from the ground what is, because at the end of 13, 14 years of reforms, you would think that there would be some substantial difference in the way police and community interact.
Right.
So the federal monitor wants to know, has that happened?
Yeah.
Has there been a substantial change and improvement in the way that the police interact with the community? So they want to hear from the community. They want to hear direct testimony. You know, what they said to us the last time we met with them is every time they talk to the police about stuff that they've heard from us, they say, oh, yeah, well, that's Rashida and her friends.
Right.
So they need to be able to say, no, this is not Rashida and her friends. This is a community meeting that we heard from X person, from Y person, from all these people about these events that took place. That they need to hear from the community.
And what day is this?
Thursday.
Thursday.
February 11th. Mm-hmm. At 7 p.m., we did not invite anybody from the city to attend. We did not certainly invite the police department, so this is going to be a very safe, supportive environment where we get together and support folks who've had impactful experiences with OPD.
Is this people only who live in Oakland or people who just from
anybody
wherever?
Who has had an experience with Oakland Police Department from wherever they live, for whatever reason they were in Oakland or had that experience, we want to hear about it.
7 o'clock, First African Methodist Episcopal. How do I pronounce that?
Episcopal.
Episcopal Church.
Yeah, Reverend Mayberry's Church. And
that's on 37th.
37th and Telegraph, 7 o'clock.
All right. And how can we support this police commission effort?
So please go to our website. We just got it up and running. It's www.coalitionforpoliceaccountability.org. And you can find a place to sign up as a volunteer. You can find out about the event that we just talked about. We'll have a lot more features. We're still building the website, so it'll grow as we grow. There's also a donate button, and that is going to be very important because what we know is that the Oakland Police Officers Association will fight this with every fiber of their collective beings, and most importantly, with every dollar they can raise, not only from themselves, but from unions throughout California. This is going to be a big deal, and so we're going to need financial resources as well.
You know, just as a side question, I know I said it was my last, but I you just said something that made me think. Quentin Tarantino goes to a rally, speaks out against the police, and they basically threaten. You know, they actually said, you know, there will be payback. We're not going to tell you when. We're not going to tell you how. But, you know, you're going to pay for those remarks. This is what they said, police unions. Beyonce in town yesterday, her dancers take a picture. I am Mario Woods. They take another picture, you know, holding up the fist, you know, happy 50th anniversary to the Black Panthers, and all hell breaks loose. With the police, you know, they already have letters going out and talking about Beyonce and what they want to do. How do we make sense of that when, you know, we often ask, you know, we wish more public people, more celebrities would speak out and say something. And then they do. And then there's this harsh backlash. You know, LeBron James ran into it when he wore the I Can't Breathe shirt, which, in my opinion, made him very wary when the pressure was on him to say something about Tamir Rice, you know, when the ruling came out of that. Now all of a sudden he's like, I don't know much about it. I'm not a police critic. You know, that's right. His line.
Right.
How do we start dealing with that?
Well, I think on the one hand, we need to be very grateful because what it does is reveal the true colors of police unions. It reveals, and just like what happened in New York when they turned their back on Mayor de Blasio.
Right.
These things reveal the true nature of what we're up against. These guys circle the wagons. They act in every obvious way like a gang,
right.
Except they wear uniforms with badges, so instead of bandanas. But we are now witnessing, in terms of the way they react, we saw what happened in the San Francisco Police Commission.
No, that was crazy.
Absolutely. But see, that's
for people who don't know, they showed up 100 deep.
Exactly.
And then stormed in and stormed out and
stormed
walked out. And
didn't want to hear from the community at all.
Right.
Right?
And
we
then
don't
had
need
the uniform officers protect them.
Exactly.
It was crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Crazy. But crazy but important because what they're doing is tipping their hand. You know, up until now, they've all acted like a bunch of Boy Scouts, right? Everybody thinks police, you know, that's why juries very seldom, if ever, convict, because they present themselves as grown-up, you know, Eagle Scouts. And so, but now, because of all this scrutiny, they are revealing what their real nature is, what their real behavior is like. And we're all witnessing that. And so, actually, they are becoming their own worst enemy. So, let's keep it rolling.
And the website again?
www.coalitionforpoliceaccountability.org.
Rashida Grenaj, thank you for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.